You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
April the 13th, 2021, President Joe Biden calling for peace and calm following Dante Wright's fatal encounter with police in Minnesota. President Biden saying, I want to make it clear again, there's absolutely no justification, none, for looting, no justification for violence. He's talking about what happened Sunday night and again early Monday morning and some into last night as well. And police had to start dealing with protests that suddenly became violent. Now, even the victim's mother had said she is calling for peace and calm. Some are listening, some not. The Brooklyn Center Police Chief, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota Police Chief Tim Gannon has resigned, and so did Officer Kim Potter. Officer Kim Potter is the one who fired the one shot that killed Duante as he was apparently resisting, by video showing, resisting and trying to get in his car when officers were trying to handcuff him. Now, she yelled, taser, taser, but she fired with her pistol. We're going to get into that in the next segment as to how that happened. Is there not some way to make sure it doesn't? I mean, that was a tragic mistake on several levels. She's not a rookie, the officer, 25-plus years, experienced. But at that point, she pulled, apparently, in her mind, the taser. That's why she was yelling taser to warn the other officers she was going to fire it. And she pulled the trigger and realized she shot him. And in fact, she immediately said, oh, my God, used an expletive, I shot him. He drove off and crashed down the street, but dead of the bullet wound. Former President Obama is saying we as a nation need to, quote, reimagine how law enforcement works following the death of Duante Wright. He said we just need to reimagine. Of course, all this is happening. This particular event happened within 10 miles of where the trial is underway for former officer Derek Chauvin, charged with killing George Floyd. So former President Obama said, the fact that this could happen, even as the city of Minneapolis is going through that trial, indicates not just how important it is to conduct a full and transparent investigation, but also how badly we need to reimagine policing for the country. Well, some are calling for radical changes. You've got Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Democrat of Michigan, saying that the shooting was not an accident, and adding that because policing in the U.S. is, quote, inherently and intentionally racist, and then called for an end to law enforcement entirely. She says no more policing, incarceration, militarization. It can't be reformed. Now, what do you think would happen if you say, okay, all the police officers stay home? President Biden, through his White House press secretary, responding to that remark by Congresswoman Tlaib, Jen Psaki, saying, the Congresswoman's point is not the president's view. The president's view is there are necessarily outdated reforms that should be put into place, but not to drop all policing. We'll get into that in more detail in the next segment. President Biden is planning to remove all American troops from Afghanistan by September 11th. And also the concern still is, what is Iran going to do? What is Iran going to do about Israel? All indicators are that Israel sabotaged the Iranian nuclear plant. What is going to happen in that situation? How fast can that escalate? We're going to be joined later this hour by Fred Flights, President, CEO of the Center for Security Policy. He's on top of that every bit of the way. And I will also try to get a question in about Is it a good idea and a good time to remove all American troops from Afghanistan by September 11? In the meantime, Republican attorneys general from around the nation coming together to oppose a Democrat's effort to make Washington, D.C. a state. They sent a letter to the president and saying that would be unconstitutional. That's their argument. 22 attorneys general from around the nation saying if you try to make D.C. a state, it's unconstitutional. We would challenge it and fight it every way. And yes, we know the Democrats want to do that because D.C. would then get two senators, and you know they're going to be Democrat senators. That fight is just beginning. Sit back, watch. We'll keep you posted.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beale Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
I want to make it clear again, there is absolutely no justification, none, for looting, no justification for violence. Peaceful protest, understandable. And the fact is that, you know, we do know that the anger, pain, and trauma that exists in the black community in that environment is real. It's serious and it's consequential. But it will not justify violence and or looting.
The words of President Biden reference what's happening in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, and nearby Minneapolis. Yeah, that event taking place Sunday with the killing of the 20-year-old driver by a police officer taking place within about 10 miles of where the trial continues, the George Floyd trial, and former officer Derek Chauvin. And so when the violence broke out in Brooklyn Center the other day, the governor immediately put in curfews not only for that area, but St. Paul, Minnesota, and Minneapolis immediately, 7 p.m. And that's where the problems came later in the evening. There were protests in the beginning, and they were pretty calm at that point. Now, we're going to go through this in different parts for you. It's got a lot of pieces on the board. I can't shove them all at you, so we're going to try to piece it together in a logical sense. Now, you heard President Biden saying there is no excuse for looting, no justification for violence. And he also quoted Duante Wright's mother, the 20-year-old who was shot, who said she was calling for peace and calm as well. And that's good. Peaceful protest, peaceful assembly, that's your guarantee under the First Amendment. When you start throwing objects at police or anyone else or setting fire or torching or looting or breaking windows, your peaceful protest is over. Your First Amendment rights have been curtailed in the sense that you're not really following what's allowed. So you are already violating the constitutional right of First Amendment because you're not obeying what says First Amendment rights are. President Biden also said, he said, what the question is, he said, we've all watched, I assume you did, he said, the body cam, which is fairly graphic. Question is, was it an accident? Was it intentional? That remains to be determined, he said, by full-blown investigation. Well, in advance of such an investigation, today the police officer involved, Kim Potter, resigned. 25 years on the force, 25, maybe 26 years. Not a rookie, has experience. She's the one who shot the 20-year-old the other day, Sunday afternoon. She resigned, and so did the Brooklyn Center, Minnesota Police Chief Tim Gannon, both resigning. President Biden is right that we need a full-blown investigation. But when you look at the body cam and you see how things went down, when he raises, was it intentional? You know, you can raise that question, but if you watch the reaction of the officer, I'd have a hard time justifying it. But again, this is what we had to worry about also in the George Floyd case, which is continuing. All of us saw the video of Officer Chauvin, Derek Chauvin, with his knee into the back of the neck while George Floyd was face down and handcuffed. And we were told that knee was in the back of the neck for 9 minutes. Video since then and testimony in court, which was not disputed, showed that often his knee was on the shoulder blade, not on the neck itself. So that gives us a different picture than what many of us were led to believe in the beginning. That still doesn't say what the verdict's going to be. It probably is not going to be what many were hoping it would be against Chauvin, but we'll wait and see. And of course, that continues to be a tinderbox and concern about what happens when the verdict comes down. 500 National Guard troops on duty and around the area. So how did this thing go down Sunday afternoon? The police chief said, by everything indicated, it was an accident. The officer fired using a pistol instead of a taser. But watching the video and listening to the officer's commands, he said, it's my belief the officer had the intention to deploy the taser, but instead fired a single bullet. The question is, how does that happen? And yes, as you watch the video, she fires a bullet and she says, oh my God, I shot him, or words to that effect, with an expletive thrown in there. That she was as surprised as the others were that while she's shouting taser for them to stand back, she's going to deploy the taser, she pulled her pistol. Now, the pistol, in proper training, should be on her dominant hand side. Let us say she's right-handed. The pistol would be in a holster on the right side. The taser, in standard training, should be on the left side, the non-dominant side, where she has, or an officer has to reach across his or her body to reach for the taser. So you have to make a deliberate action to pull the taser on the other side. And then in weight, a loaded Glock could weigh 30-plus ounces. The taser maybe 8, maybe 10. Plus, it feels different. It looks different. It's bright yellow generally. But when you have an event going on, sometimes officers have been accused, and I know it because I've been through some training, that you have auditory blockout where you hear people yelling commands, or they are yelling when you watch it play back, but you don't hear it. You just don't hear it. An auditory blockage of thinking, I'm grabbing the taser. In my mind, I'm going to grab the taser, but she pulls a pistol and fires the single shot. At the very least, it's negligence. Maybe not on a criminal level, but it's going to be somewhere along that line, be it accident or negligence, however you want to do it. I don't see it was intent, but again, let's see the full investigation. I would agree with that. And after the shooting Sunday afternoon, crowds did gather outside the Brooklyn Center Police Department. and some of the crowds gathering were at that time being peaceful. The Brooklyn Center.
Right down the street from Kobe Highway. What? The idea that right down the street from George Bush. This is mad and scared with them. America always.
That was fine at that point. They were peaceful, yelling, everything, but there was a 7 p.m. curfew that had been put in place by the governor. And when it came 7 o'clock, they wouldn't leave and wouldn't move, and it began to get a little bit more agitated. A Minnesota State Police officer said that a patrol colonel said, we made attempts with the protest leaders to figure out how to peacefully disperse the crowds, but not successful. So we had to stand and protect the police building, and then things were being thrown at the officers. And that's when we, in turn, fired tear gas and flashbang grenades into the crowd, warning they were in violation and to back up. But as they began to throw things back at police, then, of course, others were launching fireworks at the police lines. Again, this according to the reports. I wasn't there. You weren't either. I'm going on information being provided both by police and protesters. They ended up arresting about 40. But when the police chief is talking about what happened, immediately he got pushback from the reporters. Now, this was Monday following the Sunday afternoon shooting and the events that took place Sunday night and into early Monday morning. And the chief is using the word that suddenly put reporters in a pushback mode, as he said, the word riot. Listen.
What was your decision to issue a dispersal order while they were peacefully protesting in front of the police station? What led to you to issue a dispersal order, and then on the back end of that 10-minute dispersal order, then to issue out CO2 canisters and gas for the crowd?
So,
can you talk to us?
Yeah, just so everybody's clear, I was front and center at the protest, at the riot. We did not.
It was a riot.
Don't do that. There was no riot. Okay.
There was. So I was. We were being the officers that were putting themselves in harm's way were being pelted with frozen cans, a pop. They were being pelted with concrete blocks, and yes, we had our helmets on and we had other protection gear. But an officer was injured, hit in the head with a brick. That was a Hennepin County deputy. He was transported to the hospital. So we had to make decisions. We had to disperse the crowd because we can't allow our officers to be harmed. And I've already answered the question, I believe, about your lighting. I know that's a big deal with you, and I understand that, but I thought I'd explain that myself. So that is, I told you it's my decision, and that's why I made that decision.
Again, that's the Brooklyn Center Police Chief yesterday. Today, Chief Tim Gannon resigned. Now, you can be in a crowd like that, and something may be going down that you're not able to see, and it's not happening around you. So unless you have an overall view, you may stand there and say, there was no riot, everybody's fine back here, and all of a sudden we're being hit with tear gas. But you don't know what's happening at front or up to the side or anything else. Not making excuses. It's just you have to recognize you've been in a football stadium, baseball stadium, and all of a sudden people begin to look at one section of the stadium. Some kind of fist fight's broken up. Well, where you are, it's all peaceful. You don't see anything, but suddenly, others began to notice it, and everybody begins to turn and see it. Now, I don't know again, but you listening to the police officer, the chief, he said, this is what we were facing. The word riot in this business, in reporting, in all these decades I've been doing, it's always been you are very cautious about using that term as a reporter. There are too many times it's been abused, and it becomes incendiary. There's a protest, and maybe there's some pushing and shoving and, maybe yelling. But that's not a riot. A riot is when you're beginning to lose control of things. We got people throwing things at police, breaking into windows, looting, as they did in this case that Sunday night, not only in Brooklyn Center, but in Minneapolis, breaking into stores, a Walmart, liquor store, setting fire, looting. None of that even happening near the event, actually. But when it came to actually what happened in front of the police station that the chief is referring to, maybe the reporters were pushing back because they were employed by the networks or they represented them and they were following the line of the networks. You know what happened that night? ABC World News Tonight, NBC Nightly News, CBS Evening News did not call it a riot, referenced Sunday evening. as the violence erupted. They acknowledge it was violent, but they didn't call it a riot. ABC described it as protest turned violent. NBC said unrest. Now, unrest is far from violent, but they chose the term unrest. CBS went with violent protest. The only time there was a reference to riot by the ABC network or NBC CBS was when one of them said police were in riot gear. A CBS reporter also said a big crowd of protesters drew National Guardsmen and officers in full riot gear. Maybe that was why they were being pushed back. And the other thing that the chief made a mention of, and I don't know the background of the story on this particular incident, but he said, reference your lights. I understand what you're talking about. I don't know what he was referring to, but I will give you this. Anytime we've been on a scene and there's such an event like this, it could accelerate or maybe has already. Photographers don't turn on their lights. They're at least advised not to. Do not turn your lights on because that's going to spark more of it. You go with available light you've got. One, for your own safety. You put a light on, you become a target. Or secondly, you just encourage folks to act out where maybe they weren't going to. Well, as the president said, let's wait and get all of the answers. I told you the other day about one of the BLM co-founders and buying a $1.4 million house. Candace Owens has some remarks about that. Stand by.
Is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
She has my respect because she's unapologetic in her approach. She's telling you what she is. She's a Marxist. So Marxists steal money from other people and they enrich themselves right. until the people that they stole from are poor. And so she has stolen money from other people on the pretext of a lie that is Black Lives Matter. And she's enriched herself yep. and she's brought four homes. I mean, you have to kind of appreciate the honesty. She's not hiding by any means, you know. And so, yeah, I tend to agree with you here. She's a communist through and through, and she's been unbelievably unapologetic in her approach.
The words of Candace Owens on Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, conservative author and commentator, talking about the co-founder of the BLM, Black Lives Matter, Patrice Kahn-Calores. And she has admitted, Calores has admitted in the past, I'm Marxist trained. And that's what I am, a Marxist. And made that very clear. A lot of people didn't know that, but that's what she has said, and the others as well. Now, BLM began basically July 2013. They began with the hashtag Black Lives Matter on social media. That was after George Zimmerman was acquitted in the death of Trayvon Martin. And then, of course, it's been escalating from that time. And it has a global reach, not just the U.S. BLM was raking in a lot of money and not really accounting for it until finally some of the local chapters were saying, what is going on? We know you're getting money. Where's it going? We're not seeing it. And so BLM decided for the first time in 8 years of its existence to go ahead and release some financial records showing they took in $90 million in 2020, $90 million. Still, many of the local chapters say, we didn't really get much, but BLM said, you could apply for a $500,000 grant. $90 million, you could apply for a $500,000 grant. It still raises questions, where'd the money go? Well, that's the concern now that you've got Calores and maybe some of the others we don't know that are having some great expense accounts being covered by BLM and, in her case, buying homes. She bought a house just recently in California, a mansion, at $1.4 million. And Candace Owens says, look at the history of what she's been getting and her attitude, and then you have to ask why. Listen,
The corporations are standing behind her, which is incredibly interesting. And you pointed to something really important. You know, these corporations that are pouring millions and millions of dollars into Black Lives Matter, and you're correct, they said, we raised more than $90 million. How much more, we will never know. But $90 million, of which $21 million apparently went to, according to Black Lives Matter themselves, it went to building the black movement. Like, I don't even know what that means. $25 million going to building a black movement. Apparently, the black movement was Patrice moving herself, a black woman moving herself into other areas of the communities of people that she claims are oppressing black Americans. She's fearful of white people. White people are so bad. Well, why doesn't she want to live amongst black people? Why is she choosing to move herself into an all-white neighborhood? These are important questions.
Again, that's Candace Owens, a black woman who's a conservative author and commentator. And the area where she bought this home in California is about, I think I saw something like 1.8% black in that region. Numbers may be off, but it's not generally a black community. But it's her money. I guess she can spend it where she wants. I did see New York Post put up on the headline, Black Lives Manor, Manor, M-O-M-A-N-O-R, reference the house. What is Iran going to do about Israel after its nuke plant is sabotaged? That story still to come.
Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
I'm sure many of you do enjoy entertaining guests. I mean, it's your nature to be hospitable, but we all draw the line at unwelcome guests. You know, those that come in tramping around, oh, they're 6 feet, 8 feet, more. And when that happens, you do not want to delay. Call Rottler Pest Solutions immediately. Now, I started using Rottler more than 30 years ago because I wanted professionals. Rottler knows what is needed and at the same time will make sure that your family and pets are safe. Rottler is still family-owned and operated for 3 generations, protecting homes and businesses. 3 generations. That's impressive. So when you want to safely, expertly get rid of ants, spiders, and other critters, call Rottler Pest Solutions, 877-ROTTLER, or you can check their website. Rottler.com, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER, Rottler Pest Solutions, Rottler.com.
Well, I started out with $1 million, gambled with a man and I won me another, bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. Be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I told you the other day that the Israeli media said that Israel's Mossad spy agency was responsible for the power cut and an Iran nuclear facility, which came hours after that site began enriching uranium at high speeds. Now, again, Israeli media was quoting Western intel sources. Fred Fleitz joins us. He's president, CEO of Center for Security Policy, 25-plus years with the CIA, DIA, Department of State, House Intel Committee. Fred, glad to have you on board, sir.
Hey, Larry, good to be here.
So I noticed that you wrote a piece also about this the other day. First of all, is there any doubt that Israel is behind what happened?
Well, it's pretty likely that a nation state was behind this covert action. I think it's almost certainly Israel. The Israelis are fed up with the Biden administration's Iran policy, and I think they just decided to take things into their own hands, and they're not going to tolerate the threat of Iran getting a nuclear bomb.
So what actually happened at that facility, and what did it stop?
Well, apparently there was some type of explosion, maybe a cyber attack, that destroyed the power to the centrifuge machines. Now, these are machines that spin a gaseous compound of uranium at high speed to separate out uranium-235. That's the fissile material that undergoes nuclear fission, and you can either use that for a reactor or for a bomb. The machines are very sensitive, and Iran is not very good in terms of engineering, so an explosion and a sudden power outage could have caused a catastrophic failure and could have destroyed thousands of them.
And you point out also in a piece you did that the timing happened just hours before our Secretary of Defense for the U.S. arrived in Israel.
So our Secretary of Defense was in the air, and before he landed, the Israelis conducted this attack. They didn't bother to wait for him to land so they could tell him they were going to do it or consult with him. And this really was a stunning rebuke of General Austin and President Biden and Biden's policy that the Israelis would do this while he was in the air. And I can tell you, Larry, there is no chance that the Biden administration had advance notice of this, because I think the whole world knows that Biden officials would have leaked it to the media to stop the attack.
And not only that, I mean, the talks that were scheduled to take place between U.S. and Iran, that I thought Iran had said, we're not going to talk to you anyway, and I didn't know where that stood. But then all of a sudden this happens, and you make note that the Defense Secretary Austin is just hours away from landing when it goes down.
Yes, there are indirect talks in Vienna. That indirect means that the Iranians refuse to meet with our representatives. The discussions are held through intermediaries. They shuttle proposals between both delegations in different hotels. And the Iranians are very clear. They want all U.S. sanctions dropped, and if they're happy with the sanctions being dropped and the U.S. rejoin the deal, then Iran will stop some of its violations of the nuclear agreement. Basically, they want us to completely capitulate.
Well, as we pointed out before, and folks that listen to the program, you know Fred has been on here numerous times, an expert on Iran and Israel and the situation in the Middle East. Israel, you know, points out to the rest of the world, you might consider it an inconvenience that Iran has a nuclear weapon. For us, it's a matter of survival.
And that's the case of most of the states in the region. They are resentful that talks on this nuclear deal with Iran are taking place and took place in the past. And there was no one from the region at the table. It was European states, China, Russia, but the states who are most directly affected weren't involved. And I know I told you this before, when the Clinton administration negotiated a nuclear deal with North Korea, Japan and South Korea were at the table. I think that made sense because obviously a North Korean nuclear bomb affected them much more than us.
Now the question is, first of all, has Iran actually acknowledged? The other day they were not acknowledging, as if they didn't want to say that Israel got the best of them. Have they actually acknowledged this Iran? I mean, it's been Israel or not?
They're blaming Israel.
They are. Okay.
The Israeli government is not taking credit for it. It never does. But I'll also add that this is not the first act of sabotage. There's been other serious sabotage over the last year. The Iranians blamed Israel for that also.
But how would this event compare to the others? I mean, would this be, if you're grading them, would this be a higher grade of success on a sabotage and more effective than anything previously?
It appears to have been much more successful. It did much more damage to Iran's nuclear program. The Iranians are trying to say, oh, well, we can throw this back together quickly. We can put in faster and more advanced centrifuge machines. That's going to take time, and the new machines need to test. Larry, these things spin so fast, when the new ones are turned on, they often explode.
No.
They spin this gaseous uranium compound at very, very high speeds, and it takes a lot of engineering skill to get them to work. So Iran can't simply throw a bunch of new machines that are more advanced in there and to just assume they're going to work.
And, of course, at the same time, what is Iran planning against Israel?
I think Iran is looking at acts of terror, maybe with Hezbollah, but I don't think it's going to do it immediately because Iran's main objective right now is to get the Biden administration back into the nuclear deal and to drop sanctions. And I don't think it wants to give any excuse for the U.S. not doing that.
You pointed out, of course, that we've got other states in the Middle East that they don't want Iran to have that either. And we had the Abraham Accords. It was, I think, a very effective, an amazing piece of documents put together by Jared Kushner on behalf of the President Trump at the time, that we basically got the United Arab Emirates, and I'm drawing a blank on a couple of those. I know you would know that they pulled them all together. And is that going to hold? Is this going to be damaging to that moving forward?
Yeah, with UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco.
That's right.
I think these deals are going to hold up, but I don't know if there's going to be more of them. I'm concerned about what this is going to do to the peace process in the Middle East. It's you know, in a way, these Arab states may stick together and decide to continue this process with Israel. I think what's more concerning is that several of them may decide to start their own nuclear programs. Saudi Arabia is a possibility. So is the UAE.
That was my next question. How great is that possibility?
I think it's very likely with the Saudis. And I think other states are going to say, well, if Iran is allowed to enrich uranium and do all these other activities that puts it at the cusp of building a nuclear bomb, why should we do it?
And what would be Israel's reaction to that?
Israel will be very concerned about the proliferation of nuclear technology because it can't be sure these Arab states will be friends in the future. I don't think Israel is going to go around bombing nuclear reactors in other states. But there's news today, Iran is planning on significantly upping the purity of its enriched uranium. And if it actually does that, I think Israel might attack again.
And by that, you're talking about in sabotage-type fashion? Are we talking about full-scale, visible attacks? What do you envision?
I think if Iran is somehow able to fix the centrifuges and start enriching uranium very close to weapons grade, that will cross a red line for Israel, and it could mean airstrikes and attacks with missiles.
If it gets to that point, I mean, what would we expect the U.S. and Biden to do, and the advice to him from Pentagon Chief Austin and others?
I worry we're going to use our military and intelligence assets to monitor mostly Israel, because this administration just has it backwards in terms of our priorities in the Middle East and keeping us out of this bad nuclear deal. I think their priority will be to stop Israel from attacking Iran. That was the approach of the Obama administration. And in many ways, I hate to say, Larry, that the foreign policy of this administration seems so much worse than Obama.
Well, at the same time, we know, at least the last I've seen, Biden has yet to talk to the Israeli leadership, Netanyahu, that he never made a call to him, did he?
You know what? I thought he did.
Okay.
But you might be right. I've lost track.
I know in the beginning, the first few days, he's calling and talking to everyone else, but not to Israel, which should
be
our prime ally.
You could be right.
Ally.
I've lost track. Yeah, you might be right.
Well, one other question before you get away. Today, Biden did say that he wants all American troops out of Afghanistan by September 11. That'd be the 20th anniversary of the al-Qaeda attacks on World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Some are already applauding him for that, and yet Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell say that's going to be premature. Your thought?
I think Biden might have this right. I hate to see us abandon the people of Afghanistan, but, Larry, we can't leave our troops there forever. There's no possibility of ever pulling them out, and our soldiers are tired of being deployed to Afghanistan. The deployment there is enormously expensive. And we can't solve all the world's problems. I think the president, this is a Trump policy.
Something
that Donald Trump basically broke the ice and said, we're just going to pull out. Now, the deadline was supposed to be May 1st. Biden announced today it's going to be pushed back to September. And I think he's going to have bipartisan support for it. He may have the support of my organization. Look, I don't care if he's a Democrat. If Biden does something right, we're going to give him credit.
And if we get them back, do we have troops in any such, I'm trying to think of any theater that we knowingly have them in such a theater anywhere else in the world right now?
We have troops in Iraq and in Syria, and they were being scaled back. Trump wasn't going to pull all of them out, but he had pulled out substantial numbers, and more came out in January. I don't know what Biden will do with them. I think he'll probably keep those deployments the way they are.
All right, Fred, as always, we appreciate your expertise, sir.
Good to be here, Larry. Thanks.
You bet, we'll do it again. Fred Flights, Center for Security Policy, CEO and President. So coming up, the woke generation and the where we are now, what about a parent marrying their child?
Podcast of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light. Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light.
Roxanne. This is
Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I spent considerable time yesterday talking about how the progressives want to redefine everything. It's not a crisis at the border. It's a challenge. And we've got it under control, even though President Biden was urging emails going out to federal employees all the way from Department of Homeland Security to NASA, consider taking 4-month leave from your current job and going down to the border to help with the illegals coming across. That's not a crisis. And activating the Emergency Management Authority to go down and help. That's the emergency action. I would assume that's also a crisis. But no, they're not. And they will not use the word. And when they talk about gun control, they don't really mean gun control. They mean gun confiscation in the end, clearly. And when they talk about unity, they mean uniformity. And educating you is indoctrination. Now, they flat out admit some of these. They admit, no, these words evolve. That's what they meant in the past. But words evolve in their surroundings. That's true. I mean, there was a time that if you said someone's bad, you know, that was not good about them. But if you said they're bad, oh, man, they're the top. I mean, you know that. You know how words have gone around like that. But at what point do you begin to say, no, you can't redefine this one, that you've crossed a line? Now, if you're considering what they want to do with the Supreme Court, doing this study and eventually dramatically changing the court, as they say, for the better, but the real meaning is transforming it so it's more responsive to politicians, which is not what the court should do. And the court's supposed to be, under our Constitution, a separate entity to itself, not under the control of the executive branch nor Congress. Nor does the Supreme Court have authority over the other two. But again, in the new lexicon of the progressives, we may not say what we mean necessarily, but we say what we want. So now we come to an issue about a parent wanting to marry their own child. It falls in the category of incest. But apparently that word is not going to be acceptable to some of the woke. This is in New York. A New Yorker apparently wanting to marry their own adult child. Now, again, no one is getting the number. No one is saying how old the adult child is. They're not even identifying if it's a father wanting to marry a daughter or a mother wanting to marry a son. And they are saying that supposedly that they, according to what they've filed legal papers, they're giving the barest picture of the would-be newlyweds. They don't identify gender, ages, hometowns, or the nature of the relationship. The filing says proposed spouses are adults. The proposed spouses are biological parent and child. The proposed spouses are unable to procreate together to have children. So I don't know if that means of the same gender, or age is an issue where they can't procreate, or if it's a medical issue that there will be no child born out of this union. In New York, even in New York, at this time, until the wokeness gets hold of it, incest is a third-degree felony, punishable by up to 4 years behind bars. Incestuous marriages in New York are considered void. The spouse is facing a fine and up to 6 months in jail. Marriage licenses in the five boroughs require potential spouses to list their birth parents and attest to, quote, there are no legal impediments to the marriage. Well, back in 2014 in New York, a state appeals court unanimously approved a case involving a woman married to her mother's half-brother, and noting the genetic relationship was similar to first cousins. But even that ruling cited, quote, the almost universal horror it cited in which a parent-child marriage is viewed. So they are asking in this filing for a judge to declare the laws of incest and denying them the right to marry unconstitutional and unenforceable. The lawsuit dubs it as PAACNP. There's your alphabet again. Parent and adult child non-procreationable couples. They're either virtually or literally impossible to consummate the marriage in the ways that it would lead to a child. A New York law professor said that there are known cases of parents who were separated from their children in infancy and then reunite decades later and become romantic, and whether or not they even know that's their child or related at that time, that's hard and to know, and there's records do exist, but not that many. One attorney said, this is never going to fly. They said the closest you can come would be Woody Allen, and that was not his daughter, an adopted child that he never officially adopted. And he said, and I think he said it right, that story still turns people's stomach. Others say all this litigation just premature. If they're not really going to go through with it, they just want to test the law. This is where we are in this nation. Is this making our nation better and stronger and our families? You don't need to answer. I know the answer, and so do you. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.